Blog Talk Radio.
Lincoln 103, 5 Lincoln 102, Lincoln 103 and 102.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
Henry 8, Henry 9, respond to gate 437, Bravo, for your dignitary detail. 3K911, unattended 400, lower level, near carousel 4, black bag. GTA in progress, 401 parking structure, section 4 boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
415 passenger onboard aircraft.
Control 2 Franklin and Brown.
484 suspect, the female, Hispanic, 28 years of age, blue jeans, no further.
Control 5 Frank, 401 is a route.
Hello, hello, hello. It must be Monday night because the Private Officer Beat on the POI Radio Network is live once again. I'm the host, founder, and CEO of Private Officer International, a security and law enforcement organization. Glad that you're with us for this live edition of the Private Officer Beat, broadcasting from the park-like settings here in the foothills of North Carolina. Whew, what a beautiful day. It's been a little bit warm, still around 82 here, but it's nonetheless beautiful, beautiful ice cream truck and the kids outside here in the parkland, and just a beautiful setting. We have much to talk about tonight, a lot of stuff happening, and as always, a short amount of time to spit it all out to you. Tonight, we're going to be talking in our training segment about active shooter training. We'll be giving you some fundamentals and some base guidelines for that. Of course, we can't give you a full training, but we're going to give you some baseline to go by. We have a lot of news to share with you as well. Breaking news out of Oklahoma, as you may have heard, massive tornadoes have been breaking out in the last 48 hours in the Midwest. Today, a massive tornado hit an elementary school in Oklahoma City or nearby, slammed right into it. It was a direct hit. Many people injured, possible deaths. We just got a report off the wire that people are still trapped. It's been a horrific day in Oklahoma City. Over the weekend, 5 law enforcement officers also lost their lives in the line of duty, including 2 FBI agents who were killed in the line of duty during a training scenario just off the Virginia beach. Not a lot of information being released on those deaths, but they were in the line of duty. Police officer in Houston, Texas, was involved in a police pursuit and was killed. An officer in Phoenix, Arizona, was also killed, and an officer in Horry County, South Carolina, also killed over the weekend. Very tragic. And breaking news this morning out of Dallas, Texas, a firefighter was trapped in a 6-alarm condominium fire, and he also lost his life in the line of duty. Things are just beginning to heat up. A lot of activity now with the warmer weather, and this is always the case every year during the break. A lot of activity during the summer months especially, and unfortunately, that equates to a lot of security and law enforcement being injured and killed in the line of duty. We'll also be talking tonight with Mike Thornhill. He's the president of the Nashville POI chapter and also the director of security for Cumberland University. We'll be speaking with him about networking and how to grow the chapter. We have a lot of new chapters and a lot of other chapters in the developing stages. So we want to give a little info to those chapter managers to help them to grow their chapter. In the active shooter segment, which will be coming up shortly, we're going to cover the basic baseline fundamentals of active shooter. And, of course, we do have a full course that is available to you if you are interested. Wow. Lots of stuff going on, a lot of breaking news. Not sure we're going to be able to cover it all tonight, but we're definitely going to make a stab at it. We still have our 2013 award recipient show to do. As we told you last week, it was delayed due to one of our guests not being available. It has been rescheduled. However, for the next 6 months, we're just really just got packed load of things going on, and we're going to try and get this recipient show done within the next few weeks. We also have our annual Hall of Fame inductions, and that's really something special because no other private security organization or private police organization offers such a thing. Hopefully, you have seen a news bulletin and a petition and have signed it by now. But one of the things last week, as you may or may not have known, last week was the National Law Enforcement Week. This is a week dedicated to police officers killed in the line of duty. It is also the week when they actually add those line of duty deaths that occurred during the past year to the Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C. However, what you may or may not know is that private officers, private police officers, and many private college police officers killed in the line of duty are not listed. Many folks believe that the Memorial Wall, which is run by the National Memorial Fund, Law Enforcement Memorial Fund, many people believe that this is a governmental entity, but it is not. This is a completely privatized business, and it is run as a business. Surprise, surprise. They operate with a board, and ultimately they make all of the decisions. Private sworn police officers, which are now allowed in more than 26 states, often have the same sworn special or private police statute commissions as any other law enforcement officer in their community, and yet they are not recognized in this highest honor of being included in the Memorial Wall. We have started a petition. Please go to our website or our Facebook page, and please sign it today if you have not. The criteria for the Memorial Wall basically says that any law enforcement officer, meaning someone who is involved in crime control, part-time or full-time, who works for a municipal, county, state, federal, or other governmental agency, who has full statutory arrest authority, can be considered to be included on the Memorial Wall. And the procedure basically is that the police chief of the agency submits the person's name, the incident information, the date, and you know what happened, and then it's presented to a board, reviewed by another board, and eventually a decision is made whether or not to include them on the Memorial Wall. While the honor of being included on the Memorial Wall is very important for all law enforcement officers, whether you work for a county or a city or a private hospital or other agency, that is definitely important. But even more important, more vital to the line of duty death family, is that there is another separate entity called the PSOB, which is the Public Safety Officer Benefits. Now, this group is actually a governmental entity. It's run by the U.S. Department of Justice under what's called the Justice Benefit Program Division. This federal law called the Public Safety Officer Benefits allows all public safety officers, including law enforcement, firefighters, rescue personnel, FEMA, and others involved as public safety officers, it helps their family in the tune of several hundred thousand and sometimes even more than that, and also helps surviving children and sets up colleges funds and so forth. It's very important that private police officers, and you know, when I talked with the media over the last few days, they were kind of skeptical, and I had to clarify that we're not talking about every security officer. We're not talking about the mall security officer. We're not talking about the security officer down at the warehouse. We are talking about the same class of people as any city, county, or state police officer. We're talking about private or special police officers. As far as we know, in the last 5 years, there's been eight special or private police officers killed in the line of duty. None of them have been recognized by either the Law Enforcement National Memorial Wall or the PSOB. And we're going to change that. We are talking with the media. We have several interviews for tomorrow and later in the week. And we will continue to work to get that issue resolved because it is unfair, it is biased, and it's not staying with the changing times. Like I said, at least 26 states allow some type of private or special police. That doesn't mean necessarily that it's a security officer. It could be the local private college. It could be the local community hospital, medical center. It could be the transit authority, which is run by a private entity who has their own in-house police agency. Now, in the state of Washington, D.C., or in the District of Washington, D.C., the state of Maryland and Virginia, just in those three locations alone, there's over 10,000 special police officers who have full commission and authority of any law enforcement officer. In fact, in the state of North Carolina, as with several other states, private police officers, known as company police or special police, must go through the full police academy, the same academy that any city, county, or municipal police officer attends, and they must qualify. They must qualify in the same manner. So for them not to be included in the memorial wall or the memorial benefits really is an injustice. And so we're going to change that, and we're asking that you go to our Facebook page and sign that petition, or we've sent out several emails with a link with that petition, and we ask that you go and help us. Private Officer International continues to fight the good fight, and deservingly so, for private officers, non-sworn or sworn, but we definitely need your help. So check it out today. If you need more information, please contact us direct at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. Helpdesk@privateofficer.com. Also, big news. I was going to wait till the break, actually, to do this, but we'll go ahead and do that now. Private Officer International, as you know, is an international law enforcement and security organization. We offer more than 40 member benefits that are non-traditional. We try to keep them very timely and of real value to our members. And each year, we actually look at ways to increase those benefits and to make those directed services and resources and special training and member programs. We're always looking for ways that we can help out and really make a true difference to our membership group. Having a press release over the weekend that we have a brand new member-only service. This service will surely make a difference in times of disaster and personal financial emergencies. It is called the new Member Wellness Program. Actually, it's called the Member Wellness Program. You don't have to be new to take advantage of it. But effective June 1st, 2013, the Disaster Emergency Assistance Resource Program, otherwise known as DEAR, will be rolled out. And the first part of this is to be able to assist our members with financial crisis. We all know that security employees generally are not paid well. Many live paycheck to paycheck. Oftentimes, they have to decide whether or not they're going to put $10 in the gas tank or they're going to feed themselves for the day. Most security personnel and private law enforcement do not have access to health or dental or life insurance, and often go without emergency treatment. Just a couple of extra dollars often would mean the difference between them seeking medical treatment or not. So with this new member assistance fund, we're going to be able to provide a stopgap during those unforeseen financial crises. Our member department will administer this for our qualified members that who are in good standing, and there will be a screening process, application process, and the program will be monitored for abuse or double dipping of services, and also to ensure that certain criteria is met and that this is on the up and up. We're going to help them when crisis strikes. This is not meant to replace any other program that they might already have the benefit of. It's not meant to put a few extra dollars in the member's pocket for the weekend, and it's not retroactive to take care of bills that you might have had from last year. The second part of this is that our disaster relief fund will also assist members who are adversely affected whenever there's a disaster. They've been hit by a tornado, a flood, power outage. They have need for shelter, food, things of that nature. Within our means, we'll be able to assist them simply by contacting our office. It will be administered through our members department and our chaplain service and our chapters as well. So if you'd like more information, please send an email to helpdesk@privateofficer.com, helpdesk@privateofficer.com. Remember, this isn't going to replace what you already have. It's not going to be retroactive, and it doesn't start until June 1st. So please, no applications or contact for assistance at this moment.
I was just going to the grocery store.
Seatbelt violators, beware.
I forgot to put it on.
If you're pulled over because you've broken the law.
Oh, it's so uncomfortable.
And you're not wearing your seatbelt.
It's broken, but I was gonna have it fixed.
No matter what your excuse is, you will get a ticket in addition to the ticket for your original violation.
Click it or ticket? That's pretty easy to remember.
There was the explosion. And I remember just opening my eyes, and I got both of my legs. I had surgery after surgery, and what's going to happen next? The Wounded Warrior Project said, look, brother, everything's going to be okay. 3 months from now, 4 months from now, a year from now, you'll be fine. I don't know if I would be as well adjusted as I am now if it wasn't for them.
To learn more, call 1-877-832-6997 or visit woundedwarriorproject.org.
You are listening to another edition of the Private Officer Talk Radio Network, brought to you by Private Officer International, a security and law enforcement organization. Broadcasting today from Studio A. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy another evening of informative, engaging, and exciting news and information from the Private Officer Organization.
Well, welcome back here after the break. Another great Monday night here on the Private Officer Beat radio show. Glad that you have joined us. We are broadcasting live from the beautiful Foothill Park in North Carolina. And next week we're going to be in broadcasting live in Virginia. And we have several other live shows that we'll be taking on the road. And I also hope to be broadcasting a couple of live events in the upcoming future during training events, and maybe even streaming those along. We have a lot to go over tonight. I got quite a bit of response from the information that we put out about the most dangerous cities for security. But I want to remind you that the criteria compiled included armed confrontations, assaults, injuries, and, of course, on-duty deaths. And that was the reason why some of these appeared in the top 10 and the top 5 most dangerous states. Again, some of them not so surprising, others very surprising. to some. While we're on the radio, you can always contact us via email at radio@privateofficer.com, radio@privateofficer.com, and you can submit your news, training events, or any happenings in your neck of the woods. You can also be part of our radio. You can be a host. You can be a co-host. If you'd like to talk about a specific topic, we'd love to have you on. Just send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com. You can also follow us 24/7 on the Internet. We have a very large footprint across the Internet. You can follow us on Facebook. We're also on Twitter 24/7. In fact, that is the link for all of our breaking news and events and different hot topics happening. You can also be part of our own forums, and we're also on LinkedIn and a few other social media sites. And instead of giving you all those URLs and addresses and blah, blah links, just go to our main web page at www.privateofficer.com. You can link up right there 24/7. You can get the breaking news. You can get the Facebook page. If you're a Twitter fan, you can get all that right there on our main website at www.privateofficer.com. This week I don't have any birthdays, again, to tell you about. If you are having a birthday or know someone who's having a birthday and you'd like them to be mentioned on the program, just send their name and the day that the birthday is, of course, and their city or state, and we'll get it on the air. Send that to radio@privateofficer.com. We talk a lot about chapters, new chapters opening in Chattanooga, Tennessee, Jacksonville, Florida, South Point, Mississippi, Chicago, North Shores, a couple in Ohio, and we have several other chapters brewing out there. You can open a chapter. You can really benefit from having a chapter in your area. It's a little bit of work. It's not a lot. It's not going to take you 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It's going to take you a little bit of work, and it's rather simple to do, but it's very beneficial to you, your company, your employees, your coworkers, and the security community at large in your neighborhood. And if you'd like more information, just go to our website at www.privateofficer.com. Click on the link right there. That will take you to the chapter information. And if you have any further questions, just contact us at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. The whole purpose of having the chapters is to network, to add additional advanced training in the community, to add services to the security community, private police, public safety, loss prevention, and also to be fervent and aware of current law changes and situations happening in the legislative situation in your state. So if you'd like more information, go to our website at privateofficer.com, click on the chapter link, or send an email to helpdesk@privateofficer.com. We also have some great training events happening. A lot of people are interested, and we're putting together a number of additional trainings, but we have Force on Force using airsoft weapon training, 8 real-life scenarios, hand-on proficiency-type training coming to Nashville, Chattanooga, Tennessee, Atlanta, Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, Louisville, Kentucky, Richmond and Virginia Beach, Myrtle Beach, several other locations, Atlanta, several other locations currently being scheduled. If you'd like to schedule an event in your area, send an email. Where else? Helpdesk@privateofficer.com. Helpdesk@privateofficer.com. There's a great advantage to taking this training. Not only will it help you in real life situations, real life scenario, it also helps your company. It helps your defense if you ever were to be involved in any type of deadly force situation, any type of use of force situation. It's going to help to defend yourself and possibly save your company money by showing that you have had this advanced level training and that you were following the latest training out there and documenting your successful completion of the training. So it's very important that you do you do take additional training above and beyond what's required by your statutes in your state or that of your company. So, again, if you'd like more information, please contact us today at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. helpdesk@privateofficer.com. I do want to mention this also. It's a video that's been on the internet, oh, I guess almost a week now. It was a security officer at a shopping mall, and this was a use of force situation. So it kind of blends into my scenario here about taking it because it's going to save your butt. Video shows a security officer talking to a group of folks who pulled into the mall parking lot to take pictures of an accident, a rather, you know, serious accident on the interstate. She was a little overly aggressive, although she was doing her job. The mall had a policy of no pictures on the property. They were on the property, and once they were told to leave, and they did not, they were actually breaking a law. They were trespassing, criminal trespass. At that point, depending on what state she was in, she could effect an arrest or detention, and she could use reasonable force to detain that person. However, it was obvious that this mall security officer had little or no training, and she was pretty aggressive with the people standing there. She eventually got into a physical altercation with a female. They wrestled around on the ground. She tried to handcuff them, tried to handcuff the woman, but she couldn't. I don't think anybody was seriously injured, but there was a lot of spectators on the side of the other person, not the mall security officer. Obviously, they thought that the woman had done nothing wrong and that all of this was the fault of the mall security officer. But it was a use of force situation, although minimal. She did pull out a taser or some type of pepper spray she was trying to get to or whatever it was. She couldn't quite get to it. But had she had proper training on the use of force and on security techniques in general and authority, scope of authority, she would have probably responded differently to the people in the parking lot taking pictures. I mean, there's a way that you can handle situations without them blowing up in your face. And I got a friend of mine, in fact, we're going to be talking to him shortly, in Nashville. I was on the phone with him over the weekend, and he had a dumpster diver on the college property. I'm on the phone with him as he's pulling up, talking to the guy, gets out, talks to the guy, and he says, "Hey, how you doing, buddy? Can I help you?" I myself would have probably got out and said, "Hey, let me see your license. Let me see your identification. What are you doing here?" He was more laid back, and, you know, there are situations that you have to assess, and some of them you're going to be laid back, and others you're going to be a little bit more aggressive. And in this situation at the mall, had the security officer been properly trained, had she approached it differently, she probably would not have found herself in that confrontational situation or have been assaulted the way that she was. But unfortunately, I would say a lack of training, probably a lack of supervision because, she didn't call for any assistance. She didn't call for a mall manager. She didn't call for police. She didn't call for backup. It was just her, the lone ranger, in a crowd of about 8 or 9 people, which could have really turned even worse. She could have really been physically injured and assaulted by more than one person, and it really could have turned out to be quite bad. As it was, there was rolling around on the ground. There was some punching, chokehold, and some minor injuries. My understanding is that an arrest was made. I'm not clear who got arrested. I don't know if it was the assailant. I don't know if it was the mall security officer. That's something that we'll need to check up on. Brett Davis, Brett will check up on it and have an answer for me tomorrow. But, it's just a situation of bad or no training. And when you get into these situations and you use force, any level of force, whether it be pepper spray or physical force or deadly force, there's some consequences. Even if you're in the right, even if you had the right to use force, there's going to be some consequences either criminal or civil. You know, this mall security officer may have faced criminal charges. I don't know. But I will know tomorrow. We'll have that for you tomorrow. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back.
Nurse, I need you to apply pressure to the head wound until I can get to it. I'm concerned she's lost too much blood.
Oh, no.
You in the corner, who are you? You're not supposed to be here.
She's my girlfriend, Doctor.
You need to wait out in the waiting room.
Please, Doctor, I want to stay with her.
Look, she's been badly injured. So if you want to do what's best for her, you need to let us do our work.
Please, Doctor, she has to be okay. I didn't mean to do this. I love her.
Wait a second. You were the driver?
Yes, but I didn't mean to. I swear, we went to dinner. I was just buzzed. I only had a few drinks.
Just buzzed? Why didn't you tell us that? In that case, your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great. You want to get out of here?
I can't believe this. Really, Doctor? She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this state.
You are on the Private Officer Beat.
Hey, Rick, it's Mike.
How are you doing there, sir?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Good. You are live on the air. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, your position, all that good stuff.
Well, I'm Mike Thornhill, calling from Nashville, Tennessee. I'm the president of the Nashville chapter, Private Officer 301. And also the director of security at Cumberland University in Lebanon, Tennessee.
Well, yes, you are. I can verify that. Good to have you on here tonight with us, Mike. I wanted you to call in tonight because we have a number of new chapters opening, and we have some others that are currently considering it. And want to kind of give them a few pointers about how you have been able in a very short amount of time to really get the chapter in Nashville going, and how you go about it, and a little bit about the use of social media. I know that you're using LinkedIn quite a bit and Facebook, and kind of tell us how that's working and some of the other things that you've been doing to get the word out.
Everything's been going real good on Facebook and Twitter and also LinkedIn. The thing is, we've got a good product. We've got Private Officer International, and to sell something like that, you've got to really believe in the product, which I do. And so I've been contacting local security companies, and I'll probably send out about 200 emails a month inviting them to our chapter meetings. I'll pretty much call different Homeland Security, FBI, different ones like that, as you know, and contact them, come out and speak to our chapters. And I just really believe in a Private Officer and trying to promote it all I can. There's been good reception towards it, and we've got a good following on Facebook and LinkedIn both, and it's just a real good cause, and I support it 100%.
Yeah, you sure do. Now, I also noticed that, like us, you also post a lot of the local news. I guess you gather that through the press releases and the local news, and also you repost the news that we have from our news blog and any emails that we send out. Has that kind of helped get the word out, and have you had much response from those type of things?
More people in Nashville are learning who Private Officer is, and now I can talk to a police officer and I'll tell them who I am, and they said, oh yeah, and I've heard of you. And so it's been good. And also, you know, we're on Facebook, we're going worldwide on our posts, so here it is. You know, I think besides the Private Officer, people need to know what's going on in Nashville also. And so I just try to cover a wide variety as much as I can.
Now, do you think by using social media that that's getting you more attention than if you really spent time trying to send out individual emails to people?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've got followers in Australia, Canada, all over the country, and a lot of people really liking what we're doing here locally and also what y'all are doing in North Carolina. And it's just something we're trying to promote, and a lot of people don't know private arts exists, and that's what we're trying to do is get the word out and let them know we are there, and we're there to help the security officers, law enforcement, whoever needs our help, and just get out their information.
You know, this is really still a grassroots effort, and it's a word of mouth, and now with social media, it kind of makes it a little bit easier to reach a mass amount of people in a short amount of time. One of the other things that you did to help during the memorial ride last year was you contacted a local radio station, and you spoke with them, and they invited us out to be on a radio program. So that was a lot of initiative on your part. You know, a lot of people may not have done that. And in fact, no other chapter has as of this date. But what made you think that that might be a good way to reach out to people?
Well, not everybody has computers. The station we went to has a wide, large following and everything, and so I was trying to touch those people that don't have computers and are not hooked up on social media. And so I've also this year, if you come to Nashville with me, I've got a good hookup probably to another radio station, so we might be doing a couple radio interviews. And so we'll just see how it goes.
What would you say to somebody who has just recently started a chapter? What would you tell them would be the best route to go to get it really established and to get the word out? Would you say replicate what you're doing with social media? Would you say go to the local newspaper, the radio station? What advice would you have for them?
Well, the thing is, social media is free. It don't cost anything. And just like the minute I became involved in a chapter, that's the first thing I did is I set up a Facebook and LinkedIn, and I wanted to get our name out to as many people as I could in the fastest amount of time as possible. And so every day I'm having people contact me either on Facebook, LinkedIn, where they like the news stories and like what we're doing. Radio also will cost, so unless it's something like we're doing on Memorial Ride, of course, budget-wise, we're not dealing with much of a budget, if anything, so that's where we use social media. And so right now we've got a pretty big following on LinkedIn and also Facebook and Twitter, so it seems like I've found a way to communicate.
Yeah, it really does work out well, and we have a bigger, better memorial ride plan this year. We're going to be involving a lot more media and a lot more companies. We'll be talking to you, probably have you on the program again in a couple of weeks to discuss that as well. One of the other things that you're involved in, and, you know, first of all, you have a great employer at Cumberland University. They support you 100%, and that's pretty vital when you have you know, an employer that supports what you're doing with an organization such as Private Officer International. But the other thing is that you've also recently begun getting involved in a local organization of police chiefs. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's the Tennessee Association of Chiefs of Police. And so that way, besides learning more from what they have to offer, like this week I'm going to participate in the active shooter program they've got, which is going to be in Nashville, and it's going to be conducted by the FBI. So besides getting a training, additional training through there, also I can promote private officer and turn them on to us and everything. And it's just, even at my age and everything, you're never too old to learn something. And
well,
so
you are pretty old. I'm not sure about that. You are like 120 or something.
Yeah, we're real close. But the thing is, the more I can pass on to our chapter members, experience, knowledge, training, or whatever, I'm going to do it. And
it's all about networking. It's about getting the word out there. And the whole point of having a local regional chapter is to be able to network and communicate and to assist one another in the security and law enforcement industry. And that's what the chapters are set up for. We're there to provide additional training and resources that the majority of security officers just don't have, even those working for proprietary in-house department. Now, are you going out to their yearly convention that they're going to have out in Kingsport? I believe that's in July.
It depends on my schedule. I'd like to go. I have been invited to every function they hold. It just depends on my schedule between the chapter and the work. And so I'd like to go to it, but we'll just have to see how my schedule works out.
I might meet you up there in Kingsport. I'm going to be putting together a workshop for chapter managers and prospective chapter managers on how to go about really getting the word out and how to grow the chapter, and we'll invite you to be part of that as well. But I basically wanted folks to hear and kind of get a little bit of a firsthand information on how it's being done in a chapter that really has gotten the word out. You know, a lot of people in Nashville have heard about it. Whether or not they participate, that's another question, but they've heard about it, and we've used, mainly you have used, a multitude of media, both online as well as radio. You've also been in a local newspaper, you know, and various things, and you have a great, you know, employer who's supporting your efforts, so that has really made a big difference. And, you know, basically my word to all of the chapter managers and those who want to be chapter managers is be prepared to network. If you don't know how to speak, you don't know how to communicate, you're not good with social media, and some people aren't, then you're probably not going to have a great effect in your area unless you have somebody else who can do it for you. But in your particular case, you have really taken the bull by the horns, and you continue to ride it strong, and we really appreciate everything that you're doing there.
Well, I do appreciate it, and I'm enjoying every minute I spend doing it and participating in the chapter, and also everything that you and the headquarters are doing for us and everything. And just every day I'm thinking about what I can do more for the chapter to get the word out. So. But before we go, I do want to send my prayers out in our chapter prayers to people in Oklahoma. I was watching on TV, and it's very devastating what they're going through, and I just want to let them know our prayers are with them.
Definitely. There's been quite a few tornadoes over the last couple of days in the Midwest. Oklahoma City definitely was hit hard today. Don't know what the death count is. I do know that there has been some injuries. There are. Last count, there were some people trapped still, and it's just that time of year. I saw that parts of Tennessee also had a tornado or two yesterday, so be careful as well. And thanks for calling in. The check's in the mail, and we'll talk to you soon, Mike.
I'll be checking the mailbox every day. Thank you, Rick. See you, bud.
I'll talk to you. Thank you. Being part of a private officer international chapter is a little bit of work, but it is very rewarding. It helps to get the security and law enforcement, public safety community on the same page. And being able to network with those organizations, those agencies, is only going to make you a stronger, more informed professional, as well as your company. And it's also going to be better in the long run for the community as a whole. If you need more information, if you're not currently a chapter manager, you're not currently a POI member, need more information, please send us an email at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. helpdesk@privateofficer.com. We have a ton of things to offer. We have things that nobody else offers. We have all sorts of training. We have all sorts of member benefits. We you know, just this weekend, we added the new disaster and emergency assistance and resources program. We have tons of resources and services. You know, it's just really unbelievable the things that we come up with that we have available, and the cost for membership is extremely low. So there's really privateofficer.com and join today. We're not going to, we try to keep the pricing low. We're not going to gouge you. We're not going to try to sell you things that you can't afford or don't need. We're really there for you, the private officer. Tonight we have a special and a great training. It's unfortunate that we're not able to give you a whole class in this format, but it is impossible to do. But I want to kind of go over some basics and give you some guidelines and help you to be better prepared should you face an active shooter. We're going to take one last quick break and be right back.
Another edition of the Private Officer Talk Radio Network, brought to you by Private Officer International, a security and law enforcement organization. Broadcasting.
All right, we are broadcasting live tonight, as we always do, and we're glad that you are with us. We have actually received several emails requesting the active shooter training. There are a number of programs, obviously, that are out there. Active shooter in itself is really a hot topic in the training community for private security and law enforcement. There are a lot of different programs out there. They teach different models of it. Some do it this way, some do it that way. I'm of the thought and of the position that training is good, but it's only as good as the person taking it. So if you are not serious about your position, if you're not serious about protecting the public, then you're probably in the wrong business, and no amount of training is going to help change that. With that said, teaching an active shooter course is extremely difficult. Doesn't matter the format, but even more so when you're teaching it in an audio lecture or a radio show or even in video, and I've done all of them. Most people are visual learners, so the video format does help them. And I also like to involve my students and really get them hands-on. Obviously, it's a little bit harder to do when you're teaching in this format. So I'm not going to be able to give you a complete hands-on experience, nor will I even attempt to cover every possible scenario and situation that could occur, whether you're in a school or a church or a mall or an office complex. But the purpose of this training is to set the guidelines and to give you some structure. But as we know, in these situations, things are subject to change. There's no absolutes. And every shooting, every stabbing, every violent situation that you're going to face will be different. They'll have different circumstances, different people involved, different results, and different endings. However, my hope and sincere desire in this is that some sound fundamental steps and foundational training will give you the resources and the information that will help you make a difference if you are ever faced with an actual active shooter. And again, there's really no one thing that I could say, no one thing that I can tell you, this is what you have to do. There's no template, no cookie cutter, method available. But we are going to start today building a foundation for you that will hopefully help you and also prepare you and also make you want to learn even more.
It may feel like just another day at the office, but occasionally, life feels more like an action movie than reality. The authorities are working hard to protect you and to protect our public spaces.
Type of business, no type of school, no type of city, state, location, no geographical area that we could possibly say this is where it's always going to happen, this is where the majority of active shooters occur. There's nothing really definite or specific when it comes to active shooting situations. Depending on who your employer is, your experience, things are going to be quite different from one person to the other. So we're going to start building some simple foundations and some building blocks. The Department of Homeland Security says in their own training that an active shooter is an individual actively engaged in killing or attempting to kill people in a confined or populated area. In most cases, active shooters do use firearms, and there's no pattern or method to their selection of victims. Some people think that the active shooter is, mad, or he's picked this location because he hates the people there. That's not true. Active shooter situations are unpredictable. They evolve quickly. Typically, the immediate deployment of law enforcement is required to stop the shooting or mitigate harm to victims. But, and this is something that is really new just in the last 2 years, the thought of law enforcement being the one to stop the shooting or mitigate harm to victims has changed. And a number of Department of Homeland Security, FBI, and a number of agencies have come out with new training that specifically says the public or private security will have to intervene until law enforcement can get there. Because active shooter situations are often over in 10 to 15 minutes before law enforcement arrives on the scene, The DHS, Department of Homeland Security, says individuals and private security must be prepared both mentally and physically to deal with an active shooter situation. Good practices for coping, they say, with an active shooter situation is to be aware of your environment and any possible dangers. Take note of the two nearest exits in any facility that you're in or you work at. If you're in an office, stay there and secure the door. If you're in a hallway, get to the room and secure the door. And basically, you know, pray for the best. That's what they say. Now, for the real world. Depending on who your employer is, and many say that, you know, in situations like this, just get the heck out of Dodge. Some say it's not your job to prevent it, not your job to challenge, not your job to stop threat. DHS begs to differ with employers these days. Law enforcement also believe that it is the public's responsibility in many cases. The bottom line is sometimes you're just not going to have a choice but to get involved in these active shooter scenarios. They're not always, you know, breaking news. You know, sometimes we think that we're still living in the good old days when things seldom happen and it's not going to happen to us. It's not going to happen here. That's living in la-la land, folks. Active shooter scenarios aren't always those big breaking news headlines, 30 people killed by lone gunman, student kills 20 students and 5 teachers. No. In the real world, active shooter situations can involve one or more shooters and one or more victims, period. It could happen at the local mall, at the office. It could happen at your school. There is really no breakdown of where it's most likely to occur. So there's 4 areas of concern in the response of an active and armed person in any environment that you really need to have. So I want to break these down for you. And again, we have limited time, but those are response and assessment, identifying the threat, intel and communications, evacuations and security, and neutralizing the threat. As with many workplace violence incidents, I believe, and it has been proven, that people just don't jump up in class and start shooting. A regular Joe out Christmas shopping for his family isn't going to lose it after being served bad food in the food court. He's not going to pull out a gun and blast away, killing 20 people. In most cases, it doesn't happen like that. Yes, there is instant rage. There's road rage. Sometimes emotions do lead to a person injuring or killing another, but not generally in a mass shooting situation. Most mass shooting situations, active shooters, happen over a period of time. Most suspects actually stew over it. They think about it. They plan it. And it's not something that happens in a split moment or a split second or even overnight. In the Virginia Tech shooting, where shooter Cho Sang-Hu shot and killed more than 33 people and injured close to 24, he spent more than a week planning and scouting it out and getting his equipment together and even making videos and taking pictures of himself in preparation. Adam Lanza, a 20-year-old Connecticut man who killed 26, including 20 children, did not wake up one morning with death on his mind. He did not just plan it that morning that he was going to go down to the school and kill people. No, it had been in the planning stages for weeks, as is the case of almost 99% of all active shooters. It doesn't just happen. It's not just a split-second decision. And we have to understand that there are ways sometimes to detect it and prevent it.
After firing two fatal shots at the Virginia Tech dormitory on Monday, Cho Sung-hui returned to his own dorm room and made the final preparations to mail what appears to be a video confession.
When the time came, I did it. I had to.
In a separate written document, he includes 29 photos he apparently took of himself. He looks like a normal, smiling college student in only the first two. In the rest, he presents the stern face and strikes the pose that was very likely what his victim saw later on Monday. In 11 of the pictures, he aims handguns at the camera, likely the very ones he bought in the past 2 months. In his 1,800-word diatribe, he expresses rage, resentment, and a desire to get even, with exactly whom he never says.
You've got 100 billion chances and ways to have avoided today, but you decided to spill my blood. You forced me into a corner and gave me only one option. The decision was yours. Now you have blood on your hands that will never wash off.
Much of it is incoherent, laced with profanity. He rails against hedonism and Christianity.
You just loved crucifying me. You loved inducing cancer in my head, terrorizing my heart, and ripping my soul all this time.
Though he tried to cover his tracks by filing down the serial numbers on his guns, he obviously wanted the world to know who was responsible for the worst mass shooting in America. He began working on these materials at least 6 days beforehand.
I didn't have to do this. I could have left. I could have fled. But now, I will no longer run. It's not for me. For my children. For my brothers and sisters. The chief...
We teach in our workplace violence seminars that there are indicators oftentimes that will indicate when a person is having a problem and could be someone who might create workplace violence, who might blow up, might snap, or might even be involved as an active shooter. Recently, the Department of Homeland Security, they must have been reading my mind because they issued the same type of indicators. Because employees typically do not just snap. They display indicators of potentially violent behavior over time. And if these behaviors are recognized, especially by us who are there all the time, they can often be managed or treated. Potentially violent behaviors by an employee may include one or more of the following. And this also includes students. It includes frequent customers, people that we have face-to-face interactions with on a regular basis, increased use of alcohol and or illegal drugs, unexplained increase in absenteeism, vague physical complaints or noticeable decrease in attention to appearance or hygiene. These are indicators that we also include in workplace violence. Depression, resistance to change, repeated violation of company policy or school policy, increased severe mood swings, suicidal comments, comments about putting things in order, explosive outbursts. These are sudden changes, or they could be over a period of time. Sometimes people talk about violence. Sometimes they talk to their coworkers about violence. But these are ways of us to assess, to recognize the indicators long before an active shooter situation happens. The first area that I want to talk a moment about in the active shooter response is response and assessment. Now, you've been called to a situation where there might be someone armed on campus or, at the office or whatever, wherever it might be. When do you call the police? After you verify what's going on? After you verify that somebody is armed? After someone has been shot or shots have been heard? No, of course not. The time is now. Immediately after being notified that there's a person with a gun, any place. It doesn't matter if they're not using it, they're not shooting anybody, and they're not threatening anybody. I don't want you to wait until you can tippy-toe around and try to scope out the guy, find him yourself, especially if you're unarmed. Call now. I'd rather that it be a false alarm, you know, and police get there and they do their thing and, you know, it turns out to be a hoax or a mistaken identity or the guy wasn't armed after all. I'd rather that it be like that than to have a little too, be a little too late. Too little, too late is not going to save lives. Being proactive in your response and decisions will save lives. So when responding alone, armed or unarmed, there really is a good likelihood in these situations that you're going to find yourself in the middle of an active shooter situation. You've walked into an armed confrontation, maybe a takeover robbery, an active shooter, and now you are faced with imminent threat of harm. You could be dead. There's really no time to think, no time to save anyone else other than you. You are the first priority. Remember, a dead rescuer never rescued anybody. So if you're not armed and you're not prepared to take out the shooter, you need to get secure. You need to go someplace where you can get cover and notify authorities. It's chaotic. It's hectic. Once you are secured, or maybe you didn't walk in the middle of the active shooter, you actually saw it from afar. You did some scene size up and you were able to secure yourself. Once you are in the area, you need to identify the threat quickly, without any hesitation. You're going to have to assess the situation, consider your options, and do it all in less than 5 seconds. If you've arrived in an area where there's been gunshots, be calm, be cool, be collected, scan the area. Use your senses, use scene size up. That's where we use all of our senses. We stop well outside of the area of danger because an armed suspect can quickly appear and take you out without you ever having a chance to find cover. So it's always best to get to it. Find adequate cover for you to assess the threat and notify authorities for backup. We're gonna be safe ourselves. We're gonna assess the situation if possible. In an active situation, active shooters there, we want to identify who is shooting, how many armed persons are involved, exactly where in the building or on the property that they are, what type of weapons do they have, have you seen any injured or dead persons, how many, are there any fire exits, any escape routes, is any doors to get out of there nearby? And this is where knowing your property, knowing the lay of the land is going to help you be better prepared to escape and to help others escape and aid the police to get them into the building unseen. Gathering this information and getting law enforcement involved is vital. It is extremely important. It's too late to freak out. It's too late to cower down. Shots have been fired. Now, we've got to do what's best for ourselves while trying to save others. If there's an actual shooter on scene and you are inside that area where the shooting is taking place, find cover. Protect yourself, especially if you're not armed. Essentially, in an active shooter situation, it's going to boil down to a choice of running, hiding, or fighting. And the city of Houston last year produced an active shooter training video called just that, Run, Hide, or Fight. You're going to have to decide, can you get out of there safely? Can you get some people out of there safely? Should you run? Should you just hide in place, lock the doors, and hope the shooter doesn't come in? And are you prepared to fight if he does or they do? The next task for you, once you're safe, is to notify law enforcement of additional information. If you can't get out of there, you're trapped. The best thing you can do is be the eyes and ears of law enforcement and give them as much detail as possible. In an active shooter situation, whether it's a workplace violence, it starts off as a workplace violence, or it is just an active shooter situation, you're going to have to use your best judgment, your training, your knowledge, your background to determine whether or not you can neutralize the threat, whether or not you can engage the suspect, because only you know. Regardless of what some employers say, I've heard it. I've heard employers say, oh, no, my people are just there to observe and report. Well, I'm reporting. I'm under fire. We're in the middle of an active shooter, and I've got a choice to either neutralize and kill this guy or be killed. We have to make prudent, quick decisions. And if you're not a good decision maker, this is not going to be your shining moment. This could be the death of you, to be frank and honest with you. So if you can't escape, you can't hide, you might have to confront and try to overcome the shooter using any means or any level of force necessary. Employers, they don't know. Most of them have never been out involved in a day-to-day situation. Teachers in the classroom, most of them have never been involved in an active shooter or a violent situation. Many talk a good game, but in reality, they've never been there. If you are an armed security officer, you may have to engage that suspect or suspects in a firefight. And it could be doomsday for you, or you could neutralize that threat. It's not going to be an easy situation, but it's one that has to be made immediately. No time to think, no time to call a supervisor, no time to call a friend. This is it. It's a do or die moment, or second, I really should say. Now, as an unarmed security officer, you too may be faced with actually engaging the active shooter. Oh, no, my company says don't engage. Well, here's your choices. Try to defend yourself and engage the shooter, or let him kill you. Which one are you going to opt for? Which one are you going to take? Because that decision is going to lie in your hands. An active shooter situation, a real-world shooter situation. There's not going to be time to wait for police or SWAT. You know, the old thinking was in an active shooter situation, you would wait for SWAT and armed special forces to come in and take over the situation, get the cavalry there, and then enter in. And let them get the bad guy. But in light of the numerous and continual mass shootings around the country, That no longer is the case. And the new training of police and training organizations has a new strategy. They teach that time is of the essence. Police found that waiting for SWAT or special response teams to be activated, deployed, and making the scene, getting familiar with what's going on, the layout of the building, of the property, it took them 1 to 2 hours. And with each passing moment, the shooters usually continued to kill people that were helpless and soon committed suicide. The average active shooter situation lasts less than 15 minutes. So by the time that the special forces, the SWAT team, the big truck rolls out, it's all over. It's done with. They've killed 20 or 30 people, and probably you included. So now the new training for law enforcement and the public is, if you can't run and you can't hide, defend, attack. Especially if there's multiple people, you're in a school environment or a mall. Take what you can, chairs, tables, fire extinguishers, any type of weapon that you could possibly get, and engage the shooter. The real world theory here is that, yes, some people are going to be shot, maybe even killed in doing this. But more than likely, they're going to be killed anyways without any opportunity to try to bring the shooter down. If you are an armed security officer, that doesn't mean that you have to be the hero. It doesn't mean that you're going to be the lone wolf. It doesn't mean that you're going to do it on your own. Be prudent. Think things out. The more training that you have, the more experience that you have, the more knowledge that you have, the better you're going to respond and react in these real-life situations. Consider your surroundings. Don't shoot if people are in the way. Don't shoot if people are in front or directly behind the shooter. Is anyone in a crossfire pattern? Just this week, over the weekend, a Long Island, New York police officer responded to a hostage or a home invasion situation. The suspect took a young lady, a college student, and held a gun to her head while police entered. Unfortunately, police shot the suspect, but also shot and killed the victim, the homeowner. So be prepared. Are you really prepared to take a life, maybe even an innocent person's life, during the shootout? There's not any training that's going to prepare you 100% for every scenario. It's not any training that's going to prepare you for shooting the wrong person or dealing with shooting even the right person. You know, a lot of people say, and I go through this in my armed training, oh, yeah, I can kill them. Somebody point a gun at me, it's all over. That's all well and good when you're sitting without having to face such a situation. But once you fire a gun and once you have actually killed someone, that's something that will never leave your mind. It will never leave your memory. It will be with you every day, whether it's a good or bad shoot, whether or not you had to. Are you really prepared? Are you really prepared to take a life? Yes, training, experience, it all makes a good difference. It all helps. But mentally, you also have to be prepared. There are five stages in an active shooter. The first stage is called the fantasy stage. During this stage, the shooter has daydreams of the shooting. They fantasize about it. They fantasize about the news coverage. They idolize the other shooters that have done the same thing. Might even draw pictures of the event or make web postings. Would-be shooters in the fantasy stage will also discuss their desires with friends and foes. They'll tell them about how it would feel to blow away law enforcement or whoever. Some might even say that they would kill police if they intervened. The second stage is called the planning stage. That's when they really get down to the brass tacks, when they really get down to planning. Who, what, where, when, how. This day is going to live on forever. They put it down often in writing. They plan it, and then they execute it. During the planning stage, they'll sometimes plan who the best way to get the most victims, the location, and even sometimes target specific victims. They'll determine what weapons they'll need, or that they're going to use, how to get to that area, how to conceal the weapons, what type of dress, clothing that they need to wear so that they don't arouse any suspicion. And if police do get tipped off during this stage, once again, intervention can be made prior to people dying and families crying. So it's really important that we are observant. In the third stage, this is the preparation stage. During this stage, the suspect may be obtaining gunpowder and improvised weapon devices, or explosive devices. He might break into his grandfather's house to steal some weapons and ammunition for the event. He might break into a gun store. Active shooters have also been known to call friends and tell them not to go to school or work that scheduled day. There's a tip-off. Something big is about to happen. The fourth stage is called the approach stage. That's a very dangerous stage. That's when the suspect has made his plans, decided to carry out the act, and he'll either be walking, driving, or riding toward his intended target, already armed with his tools of death. Contact with that soon-to-be active shooter could come in the form of a traffic stop. It could be a stop and frisk. It could be a security or law enforcement officer stopping them to question maybe their behavior or suspicious activity. A thorough investigation can still lead to an arrest of this suspect before he brings down a multitude of victims. If you're alert, if you're prepared, you can stop the active shooter from ever reaching his target. The fifth stage is called the implementation stage, and once that happens, he's already opened fire. And immediate actions will need to be taken to save other lives. The active shooter will continue to kill until he runs out of victims or ammunition or is stopped. And, I can't say this enough. We have a choice in these situations. These are real-life situations. This is not TV. We can either do whatever we must to stop that person, or we can become one of his victims. The sooner that a officer or even a citizen intervenes with an effective, efficient act of courage, the less casualties there's going to be. And in past incidents, active shooters have been stopped by off-duty police and security officers, school teachers and students, even principals have died recently. Another principal was killed in Connecticut. A principal in Wisconsin was killed during a school shooting. There's a saying by Sir Robert Peel. It said, the police are the public, and the public are the police. This country has really forgotten that police officers are merely paid members of the public that perform duties that are incumbent on every citizen. And in certain situations, it is definitely incumbent upon you to make the decision and possibly pay the ultimate price of keeping others safe. Forget the training. Forget the skeptic people who say that it's not the security's job to confront them. It's not the security's job to get involved. They're there to observe and report. You know, there's going to be a lot of times when you just can't observe and report. You got to get involved. We have a choice to make as private officers whether or not we're going to do the right thing for us or whether we're going to do the right thing for everyone in that moment. It's not an easy decision, but it really is one that's made every day that you go to work. People don't really think about it. I guess if they did, they wouldn't have the job that they do. But, you know, every day that you go to work, every day that you put on a uniform, every day that you put a badge or gun on, every day that you go out to protect and serve, whether you're a private officer or public officer, you're putting your life on the line. No two ways about it. And there might be a time when you have to pay the ultimate price. Active shooters don't happen every day, but it only takes one to change the lives of many. Thank you for being with us here on the Private Officer Beat radio show. I hope that these words have helped you and will help you in the future. Until the next time that we see you here on the radio, be blessed, stay safe, and join us again right here on the radio. Thank you.